get you a few investments. So when you walk into that job, it's less stress. You know what I mean? Like, man, I made $2,000 on my options or whatever, or a course I created, or I made $2,000 with my group that I'm coaching and things like that. So I'm not really gonna let the BS in here get to me today. You know what I'm saying? But when you're depending on that job and you're kind of like married to that job, or you in bed with that job and you're stuck there, then they have more control over you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Oglesby and Scott Show. This podcast holds the belief that business and investing are team sports. We drop gems to help you turn your capital into generational legacy. We're sharing with you the best stories of successful African-American business owners and entrepreneurs.
Todd Consulting presents the Vending Machine Business Webinar. You can only have one job, but you can have as many vending machines as you want. This is your chance to see how we do business and how you can start your very own vending machine business. Avoid the mistakes we made and start winning. You'll be shown how we find, negotiate, buy, and manage our vending machine business, generating thousands per month, and how it has unlimited scale. To find out more details, hit us up on the link in the bio, on Instagram at Partner with Millie, or on Instagram at Todd.Capital, or just head over to Gumroad.com/Todd Capital.
And now, here are your hosts, Miss Flippin' in Heels, Rashauna Scott, and Mr. Todd Millionaire himself, Charles Oglesby.
This is the Oglesby and Scott Show. My name is Charles Oglesby, also the Todd Millionaire, here with Miss Rashauna Scott. How have you been, Rashauna?
I'm good. How are you?
We know you're doing good. We see the posts. Top in Chicago, millions of dollars sold. So shout out to that, man. Shout out to you. Shout out to everything you're accomplishing. You are an inspiration to a lot of people. I know. I see the likes. I see the comments. So shout out to that. Make sure that the guests know that you're doing some great things during a, quote, pandemic.
Yes. Yes, yes. No, I'm good. I'm good. First quarter done, right? Record-breaking. And I think, it's interesting because you don't really realize what you are doing and what you're setting out to accomplish when you just have your head down and you work, and then all of a sudden you look and you you're topping charts. And it's like, okay, how can I do better next quarter, right?
Right, so. Right. It's like, it doesn't stop. It just ramps up. Hashtag Black Girl Magic, shout out to all that good stuff. And welcome to another show, guys. It's been a while. I think we've been posting episodes, but those have been banked episodes. Those haven't been episodes we've been recording freshly. So yeah. We're going to start bringing that fresh fire, that fresh heat, giving you guys the game like the Oglesby and Scott Show can. And with us today, we have a special guest, somebody who was supposed to be in this show probably years ago. We've been following each other for a while.
Right.
And just it's so cool to see what his brand has become and just seeing the numbers he's been putting up recently, six-figure months, just crushing it. So shout out to that. The brother goes by the name Marquise Robinson. He is a real estate investor in the Georgia market. He is a VSU alumni. He is a member of Kappa Alpha Psi. And just a brother who's crushing it right now. So welcome to the show, man.
Man, thank you. Thank you. Like you were saying, man, I've been a fan of the show for a while now, man. I think like Rashauna was saying, when your head is down, man, I wanted to get on with the first opportunity, but I really felt as if I had more work to do, before I came on, because listening to some of the great people you had on here, man, they motivated me to keep going. So when I first started my journey, but I'm grateful for the opportunity to be on with the both of you all. Y'all are killing it, man.
Nice. Yeah. So thanks so much for joining us. So we'll go ahead and kick it off by asking, tell us what life was like growing up.
Okay, life growing up. So I want to put a disclaimer out there. I'm from Georgia. That does not necessarily mean I'm from Atlanta. So I grew up in South Georgia for the most part, which is very rural. You know what I mean? Small towns and things like that. I was born to two teenage parents. My mom, and my dad, and things like that. My mom did the best she could with me and my two siblings, my brother and my sister. It was a decent upbringing. I like to tell people I come from the bottom, but when I say the bottom, not necessarily that I grew up in the project, so I just had the roughest upbringing. But it was like, it's different growing up in South Georgia compared to Atlanta. It's less opportunities down there. It's almost like we're kind of forgotten about. So, but I had a good upbringing, man. I was the first college graduate in my family, on my mom's side, first one to join the frat. A lot of firsts. So that kind of like really fueled me to get to the level that I'm at now. Cause I'm like, man, okay, I'm the first to do a lot of this stuff. I have to keep going because they need to see it, you know. And then my brother went to college a few years later. He joined Kappa as well. He's a Kappa man. So it's just, you know, that I just knew. I kind of feel like, man, I may be that one that really changed the game. You know what I'm saying? So, but I had a decent upbringing. You know, I played sports and things like that. But I was always into, you know, hustling and business, you know. And I kind of felt like that I knew something was different about me, you know, growing up, because I never really wanted to fit in and, you know, fall in line, if you will.
So a lot of people these days bash college. They're like, oh, college, you can't get no job, blah, blah. But I feel like college and also Greek life add value to certain people, African-American men, African-Americans in general. And so it's interesting that you talk about you being a Kappa and your brother being a Kappa. How do you think that being in a fraternity helped make you into the man that you are today?
I think the networking, man, you know, the networking, you really seeing people. Because again, you know, I grew up in South Georgia. It's not really too many positive black figures, if you will. You know, it's a lot of people that just going through the motions and things like that. A lot of people down there, they don't really have that much hope, as opposed to Atlanta, where you see so many people that look like you driving Bentleys and owning businesses and things like that. So I would say, you know, being a member of the frat exposed me to black men with families. You know, again, like my parents were never married, and none of my friends growing up, their parents were never married. So I really didn't really meet people who had parents that were successfully married and until I went to college. You know what I mean? So that kind of exposed me to like, okay, man, everybody's parents, they're not at odds. You know what I mean? It's some beautiful families out here and things like that. But I would say with the frat, man, it really exposed me to more businessmen. It kind of confirmed some things I was thinking growing up. Like, man, I wanted to be a businessman, you know? I mean, even growing up, man, like the first person I researched was my guy, Bob Johnson, who used to own the Charlotte Bobcats before, you know, Michael Jordan took over. Ironically, he's a Kappa man. So, you know what I mean? He started BET and things like that. So that kind of like started to get my mind like, man, I want to join this organization because I see what this black man has built. I know I can build something if I find the right niche or find the right hustle. So I'm pro college, but with an asterisk on that, if you're going to go, I highly recommend the kids in our community go on scholarship. And when I say scholarship, not necessarily athletics, you know, you need to go on a STEM scholarship, some type of scholarship. Like it's funny we bring this up because I'm releasing a scholarship tomorrow for my community because I want to promote business in my community back home. So, I think I'm pro college, but with an asterisk on it by saying you need to go for something that you know is going to put you in a position to win long term. Like, don't go just to be going because your friends are going. You know what I mean? Like, I feel as if we need to identify this with our kids around 15, 16 and say, hey, Todd, young Todd, what do you want to do with your life? Or what are some of the things you want to do with your life? Okay, you want to be a businessman. You may want to look into a business admin degree or accounting or finance, something like that, that's going to really transition, you know, because my first job out of college, man, I was selling cell phones at Verizon. That had nothing to do with my degree. And my mom would always question me about that. She was like, is that really what you want to do or you just get paid? You know what I mean? And that's it's like after people graduate college, it's almost like a depression stage slash, okay, now what? Because I'm out of that bubble. You know what I'm saying? They're struggling, man.
So this is important because I feel like our generation was told to go to college. Yeah. And so people thought that it was just go to college, not go to college to get the right degree so that then you can transition into something that means something. We were just sold the idea of the degree. Yeah. So before we leave college, you went to VSU and you're a Kappa and a very notable businessman and billionaire went to VSU and he's a Kappa. What is that like?
I think people get this mixed up. I went to VSU, the one in Georgia, not the one in Virginia, but good friend Eugene, he was on the show, I think maybe a year or two ago. He went to that VSU and he talks a lot about him, but it's funny. That's one of my favorite books though.
Reginald, I was like,
that's my guy though.
I was hoping that was a connection we can make.
I wish.
So, take it away, Rashana.
Wait, so you just went like college. What? Who are we talking about?
Reginald Lewis. We're talking about Reginald Lewis.
The man. Oh, okay. Football player?
No. He's a business acquisition strategist. What are you? And lawyer. Jeez. You don't know Reginald Lewis? Why should white guys have all the fun? First black billionaire? Come on, man.
Oh, yeah. Yes. The author of that book. Got it. Cool. All right. So we can edit that part out, Donald. So I wanted to ask about the exposure piece, right? Because we talked about that. I feel like I talk about that often, and I'm so glad that you brought it up, and I'm glad that you asked that question, Charles, because I was actually going to say, like you say, you were the, you know, first person, you know, to graduate college, the first businessman and all of that. And, you know, what do you think it was that initially kind of lit that fire? Like you said, was it even before going, because even, you know, like you said, when you got to college and you pledged and you met all of these businessmen, but you even made a decision saying like, okay, I'm going to go to school, right? That, you know, you, like you said, you were in the streets, you were hustling, but you chose a different route. Like, was there an exposure piece, or was there something that happened like while you were in high school, even prior to that, that you think helped put you on, you know, the path that you're on now?
I'll probably say, you know, just looking back and saying like, everybody I know is struggling. You know what I mean? Like, what do I have to lose by going forward and really taking a different route? Because I was like, this, what we're doing right now, no one owns property. Everybody's renting. A lot of us live in the projects. This isn't working. And like I was saying earlier, like, I had so many wins, you know what I mean? Graduating college, pledging capital, starting businesses and things like that. And I was like, man, I'm different. So I embraced that. You know what I mean? Like, I take pride in being the black sheep, if you will. You know what I mean? Like, because I know I'm setting the standard for, you know, family members to come and things like that. And, you know, now they're coming around and like, okay, man, my cousin reached out to me the other day. Hey, man, I'm thinking about starting a business. That means more to me than 6 figure months. Because at least somebody in my family sees it, like, and they understand I can do that as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I saw this quote by 9to5 Billionaire, and I don't know who was quoting him, but it was the most fire quote I've heard in a long time. And he said, your level of success is equal to your level of exposure. And I was like, that's crazy, because it's so true. Like, if you look at he was really, if you look at, like,
I'm just playing,
any of the people that we've talked to, Aisha, Doug, maybe even Rashana, like, they've all said, like, yeah, my parents used to drive us around these neighborhoods, and that became my vision for what I wanted in life. Right. And so I think that's super cool. When did you start executing on that exposure? When did you start getting into investing, getting into business and that kind of stuff?
I would probably say, you know, again, as a kid, I had a few little hustles. I was selling, you know, Dragon Ball Z pictures and all kind of crazy stuff. But when I really started to get a feel for business, I had a Greek paraphernalia company called Custom Made, right? So I would go to the vendor, you know, I know you're in the organization yourself. So I would go to the events and sell T-shirts and stuff like that. I'm like, man, it's really a market for this. You know what I mean? But the only thing about that was it became a job, because if I didn't show up, then I didn't get any sales, or I would have to ship the stuff off from UPS and things like that. So that was my first, I would really say, legitimate taste of entrepreneurship and really, you know, investing my money in other things. And then I kind of got, you know, I got a little bit more hungrier. And I, my cousin, she's a broker up here in Atlanta. And, you know, she was doing her thing with the real estate. She's kind of like a sister to me. And then, you know, like everybody else, I went to like a seminar. It was like Dan Merrill. I don't know if you guys heard him.
Mm-hmm. Flip his house.
Yeah, you know, go to the thing. And then he make the people, you know, go to the back of the room and, you know, sign up for the 20K program and all that crazy stuff. Mm-hmm. But that one day really helped change my life. Like, it kind of showed me, like, you can really make money without having a real estate license. And then I started seeing Jay Morrison on YouTube, started seeing his videos. And I kind of just fell in love with it, because I'm like, man, you know, because I was teaching before I got into real estate. I was a teacher. A lot of people don't believe this, but I was a teacher, man, you know, getting paid once a month. I was making $2,000, you know, because I was in that stage of my life where I was doing what I thought society, you know, I was doing what society wanted me to do. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to teach and I'm going to educate, you know, kids that look like me. But what I started to notice is, man, a lot of this stuff in the public education system is outdated. You know what I'm saying? A lot of these kids, they're leaning towards entrepreneurship. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I, at that point, like, man, number one, I'm not making any money. Number two, I'm not happy, because I really would prefer doing my own thing, having my own company. And number three, if I do this right, I can come back and teach these same kids how to be business owners. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's a fact, man.
Yeah, and I think the thing is too, like you said, by being a teacher, not only were you doing what other people expected for you to do, but you were also doing what was safe, right? Or what was being safe at that time. I don't think we come from a generation of a ton of risk takers. And I mean, I remember being on a podcast one time, and, you know, we talked about like oppression, and we talked about like black business owners, you know, starting businesses back in the day and them getting burned down, and right, how, you know, all of this, that trauma and all of that has led to so many reasons of why, you know, we, you know, just generationally have had success in business, or why we have not, or why we've, you know, are have pushed, continue to push our kids towards, like you said, the traditional go to school, get a degree, and that whole thing. And being lied to, essentially, in regards to like job security, you know, being secure and it not being secure at all. So you were definitely doing what was safe. And then, like you said, when you were like, look, is this, am I being true to myself? And I think the thing is, there are so many people, especially in today, that are seeing, like you said, if they can do it, then I can do it too. And am I even happy with what I'm doing? And, you know, we are definitely like the generation of, man, F that job.
Right, right.
And, you know, and it's like, hey, I'm going to figure it out. Like, so you went from making $2,000 a month to over six figures a month. And you would not have been able to do that if you continued to play it safe.
Exactly. Exactly. I totally agree with that, man. Because again, I look back on it like, man, you know, every time I took a risk, for the most part, I've came out on top. You know what I'm saying? It's like, man, like, what do I have to lose? You know, because, and again, this is nothing against people with 9-to-5, but the whole 9-to-5 thing has only kept my family going in the same circle in the rat race. So somebody had to, you know, run off the plantation, if you will, and come back and get everybody else later on down the road. You know, that's kind of how I view it.
Yeah. It's interesting because I like to look at people's lives and I look at like how doing something played out for them. So it's like, how did that whole job thing work out for you? And if you worked your face off, worked until 60 and retired broke, then what's in store for me if I just follow your path?
Right.
I don't want to follow that path. What I like that you said also is that you can kind of impact the system by being outside of the system. So it's like a lot of people that I know, they think that helping young kids is by going and being a teacher. Or by going and being a social worker, or by going and being whatever, maybe a counselor. But the real way is by running it up and then going back and providing opportunities and providing education and providing a pathway, and providing a connection for these kids to achieve what you achieved.
Because you have to ask yourself this also, Todd. What type of control do you have if you're doing it the way the... Because, again, it's a lot of politics in education. I'm pretty sure you all know that. It's a lot of politics in education, man. Like, I taught in Fulton County Schools here in Atlanta, which is Alpharetta all the way down to East Point and College Park, you know. And the kids in East Point and College Park would have books with holes in them. And the kids up in Alpharetta would have, you know, Chick-fil-A delivered there and loud. Wow. iPads and all this type of stuff. And you say to yourself, it's Fulton County school system, not South Fulton and North Fulton. It's so much politics in that. And you ask yourself, what type of control can I really have? What kind of impact can I really have on the kids if I have to do it the way they want me to do it? You know what I mean? And if we're being honest, a lot of kids, specifically in our community, they're more than likely going to listen to the guy that's ran a bag up and really made it out, as opposed to, you know, the guy that's just making $2,000 a month. You know what I mean?
Right.
So once I start to see it like that, I'm like, okay, I'm going to go get it and I'm going to go show you this is how I did it legitimately. You know what I mean? And I live by this, man. You know, I think in our community, man, we preach sports so much that I feel like a lot of kids don't really reach their full potential, because you can only play sports for so long, but business, man, forever. You know what I mean?
Forever. And the crazy thing about sports is like, there's one champion, there's one winner, but like, that's not how business works. In business, you can be right. As long as you on the field, you win it.
I'm with you.
What did your first deals look like? Were you still working as a teacher and getting into real estate? What did that look like for you?
You know, but I tell people this story, they laugh, they just don't believe. Like, I am a maverick, man. Like, I quit my job. Like, you know, I quit my job and I was like, man, I'm going for it. Like, I cashed out my retirement. Because again, I taught in Florida too for like a year. So I cashed out my Florida retirement account. I cashed out my my Georgia teacher retirement account as well. And I went all in with it, man. You know, I found a mentor and we split my first deal 60-40, and I made $15,000 and I never looked back.
That's crazy. How long did it take you to get that first deal?
So it took me about, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, what was the deal? Like, what did it look like?
Okay, cool. Yeah. So my first 2 months, I got a property under contract. It was funny. It was a guy out of California. He lied to us about the title or something like that. So that one blew up. But the second deal, man, and I tell people, you know, if you're going to get into whether it's real estate or any type of business, what are you going to sacrifice? Like, I cut out everything that I was doing before. going to brunch, hanging out. I mean, I lost some friends on the way to this. And, you know, I went and got saved the whole night. Like I said, man, I'm going to brainwash myself into believing that I can get this done and be successful in entrepreneurship. Because, again, I had some success selling T-shirts. So I'm like, okay, if I can sell shirts, I sold phones at Verizon out of college, I can sell houses. I'm a natural born salesman. I sold shoes at JCPenney in college. So, I started like, man, this is my gift to sell and really help other people. But back to the point, man, I was driving for dollars, man. I had an app. I was putting gas in my car. I was driving for dollars. I was putting out bandit signs all over Atlanta. I was getting calls from the code enforcement department. So I emailed the guy. I sent him a message on Facebook Messenger, you know, so I wanted it so bad, man. I would go through the list of, okay, I want to reach out to Rashonda Scott about this property in Chicago, right? Everybody on her friends list that has the last name Scott, I'm reaching out to them to send the same message over and over and over and over and over and over, and over right? And the guy, he emailed me back like 3 weeks later. He's like, yeah, man, are you still looking to buy that property? And I'm like, I don't have the money, but yeah, I'm interested in buying it. You know what I mean? Funny story, he had gotten a car accident, right? He had to be like 52 or something. He got in a car accident and he had a kid on the way, which was weird to me. I'm like, okay. He was telling me about the kid he got up in North Carolina that he has to take care of, and he got in a car accident. He was like, man, just give me $15,000 for the property, man, it's yours. Mind you, Todd, this is in Bankhead. For people who are not familiar with Bankhead, it's the west side of Atlanta. It's red hot right now. We got this property for $15,000. We turned around and sold it to another investor for $55,000, and we split it 60-40. And I mean, it was all she wrote. Like, I still ride by that house every once in a while just to keep me home. You know what I mean? Just to keep me focused.
What kind of expenses did you have at this time? Were you renting an apartment? Did you have a car note? Yeah, how are you managing that?
Yes, sir. I was renting an apartment. I had a car note. I mean, I stripped my life down to, I had a car note. I had a little bit of groceries. You know what I mean? I had the apps for my real estate business, and I had Wi-Fi. That was it. You know, no cable. I had a gym membership. That was really it. I was determined to make this happen. You know what I mean?
So you actually paid for apps. A lot of people in the beginning, they try to go the free route. They're like, let me just figure out how to do this.
Yeah, free. I did some free things, but I paid for the apps, man, because it was like, man, what's $15 a month compared to what I can make with the real estate business? After, you know, you watch so many YouTube videos, you're like, okay, I can make something. You know, I can make $5,000, you know, maybe. Because again, I was making $2,000 a month and getting paid once a month. Let that sink in. You're waiting 30 days to get paid $2,000. And don't let it be like a holiday or something where you get, I something with the teachers where they get paid and then they have to wait like an extra 2 weeks or something like that when it's a holiday, something like that. So I'm like, what do I have to lose? You know what I mean?
The more I get away from the job, the more I think jobs are just pure slavery.
It is. It is, man.
Like, that's just, how do you pay somebody that much money with a clear conscience?
And, like, and you know what? And you know what, Todd? This is one thing I learned also, like, being a teacher. I don't think America, it made me think about, like, America in a different light. You know, the good and the bad, right? In this country, they don't really value public education like that. So let me find out what they value so I can get paid more money, which is business, real estate, capitalism. When I started to learn those three things are really what matters out here, then the light bulb went off like, okay, get your LLC, bro. Use your money to build your credit, bro. Build your credit, and now you have a little bit more leverage. You know what I'm saying? Instead of complaining about, oh, man, they don't pay teachers anything. They don't. And I don't really see them increasing the pay anytime soon because they don't value public education over here, man. You know, so
I feel like that's
in March and stomp, or I can go get in the real estate business, increase my value and understand capitalism, real estate, and investing in business, man. Like, and I think that's a problem in our community. Like, a lot of us don't want to embrace that. I'm not saying quit your job, but get you a few. And I was telling my mom this, get you a few investments. So when you walk into that job, it's less stress. You know what I mean? Like, man, I made $2,000 on my options or whatever, or a course I created, or I made $2,000 with my, you know, my group that I'm coaching and things like that. So I'm not really gonna let the BS in here get to me today. You know what I'm saying? But when you're depending on that job and you're kind of like married to that job, or you in bed with that job and you're stuck there, then they have more control over you.
Yo, it's the Options Trading Workshop, presented by Tide Capital. Learn the fundamentals and advanced trading strategies that allow us the chance to earn $20,000 in side money in 1 year while working a job and running multiple businesses. That's right. Learn the what, the where, and the how of options trading in this exclusive webinar. To find out more details, hit us up on the link in the bio, on Instagram at PartnerWithMilly, or on Instagram at Todd.Capital, or just head over to Gumroad.com/Todd Capital.
100%. Yeah. A wise person once said, A wise person once said that business might not be for everybody, but multiple streams of income is.
Fast.
I feel like multiple streams of income is also kind of like life insurance. Like, you got to protect your life while you're here, man.
Fast.
Man, so you make 20 grand approximately off of this deal. You don't have a job. Where do you go from there?
I'm trial and error with the marketing. You know what I mean? Trial and error with the marketing. And I had a mentor at the time, so I was paying him to coach me and things like that. And I think that's something a lot of people, they kind of like, they take that for granted, man. Like, I was grateful for the opportunity to really work with someone who really does this. Because, again, with the deal, he took the deal down with private money. Excuse me. He took the deal down with private money, and then we found a buyer 2 weeks later, and then we sold. So I forgot to add that part. So it's value in paying. I like to call it investment. It's value in investing in yourself, but investing in whatever craft or whatever field or niche that you want to go into. It's value in investing in someone that's already done it or has some idea of how to do it. You know what I mean? So I value
absolutely.
That.
You know, yeah.
That's what people drop the ball at. Oh, I'm just going to go on YouTube. Okay, man. YouTube is not going to hold you accountable like someone who has a group concentrated on people who are in your position that are trying to learn this skill and come up. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think the thing that's good there is that we talk about this often. We talk about like mentor hacking, right? And like you said, there's value in investing in that, but also get you a mentor that you can make money with, right? Like, and because most people don't have the money to pay for a mentor. So they're just like, oh, I can't afford one. Well, go, you know, get a deal and then bring it back to the table and let them figure it out.
Thanks. I totally agree. I give
that's
you
one thing. I miss about these podcasts is the gems. You can't get gems if you don't have podcasts.
Thanks.
But yeah, no. So that's good. Cool. So deal two, what does that look like?
Deal two came around. It was a guy. We had to go through a conservator. For people who don't know what that is, it's like an attorney that's over his whole estate. This guy, he was in the military. He got injured. He's a nice guy, man, but his daughter was stealing his money. You know, it's unfortunate. So we had to go through probate court with the conservator, the attorney. And then we got that one for like 25 grand. And I think we sold that one for like 62. And at that point, I was like, OK, I can hire some virtual assistants. You know what I mean? Now we're getting into my favorite part of the business, which is delegation, automation, and really scaling the business. You know what I mean?
And I want to ask you too, so how or where did you find your mentor?
Funny story. I was a friend. Again, it goes back to what Todd was saying earlier about the network. A guy that I went to college with, he was working at a recreation center or something. And the guy walked in, you know, he pulled up in a Mercedes or something like that. He walked in. He's like, yeah, man, this is my guy, man. You know, I watch this kid all the time. This guy is the king of real estate in Atlanta. He's one of the baddest guys in the city doing it. You know what I mean? And the guy got on. He was like, yeah, man, if you want to get in the game, man, come to the Atlanta RIA meeting at 9 o'clock next Wednesday. It's free to come in. Tell me what you need and I'll get you across the finish line and get you a deal closed. You just have to have the abundance mindset. And my personal opinion, that's what's holding a lot of people. That's what's killing a lot of people right now. The scarcity mindset, because they don't understand abundance. You know what I mean? I paid this guy to teach me the game, but again, I'm doing six figures a month now. You know, I pay that twice, three times if I could, you know what I mean? So I went to the Atlanta Reel, you know, I walked up to him. I was like, hey man, my guy, you know, I saw you on my guy's IG live or whatever, man. I want to introduce myself. I'm looking to get in the game. You know what I mean? He was like, okay, man, what's your schedule like? I told him I quit my job. I'm going all in with it, you know? And, you know, he liked that, of course. And he was like, man, it isn't for everyone. And, you know, I'd never forget what he told me. He was like, he looked me in my eyes. He's like, man, you know, you sound like a young guy, man, but what are you going to give up? Like, what are you going to sacrifice to really get here? And that made me think, man, it's like, there's so many people out here, they want it or they hate their situation, but what are you going to sacrifice? Are you going to start going to brunch every weekend? Are you going to go start going to get hookah every weekend? Are you going to start watching Netflix every weekend? Like, what are you going to give up to really get where you want to go? You know what I mean? Delayed gratification 101. So I met him there and I kind of, you know, I joined his group and he started teaching me the business.
Everybody says they want to be an investor, but nobody wants to sacrifice anything. Yes. And like, sacrificing is investing. Like, when you invest, you take money and then you put it over here and it makes you more money. Doesn't have to be like an actual monetary investment. You can be sacrificing your free time. You can be sacrificing your weekends, your evenings. And I think that that's one thing that I like to hear that you say. And it's actually probably not uncommon. Like a lot of us think the same way. A lot of us are bosses and we think the same way. I was having a conversation with the guy today and he was just talking about how he has these employees and they make money and you see him out there spending it, throwing it at whatever stuff. And he was over here like, yeah, I got this deal. We can put this together, do this over here. And it's like the difference between us and them is what we do with our money. Like we put our money back in the streets as opposed to putting our money on our feet, unless you can still afford that. So I think that's super dope. I don't want to skip steps, but I really want to know about these six-figure months, man. What have you been up to lately that's allowing you to just kill it like crazy?
Man, you know what, man? Again, I'm from Georgia, man. You know, is this random? We love Chick-fil-A here, but the reason I like Chick-fil-A, man, is the systems, man. The system, it's the same every time you go. So I told my, and I have a business partner with this business, by the way. And I told him before we partnered up, I said, bro, we want to be the Chick-fil-A in Atlanta of real estate. What does that mean? Fantastic product, great prices, but most importantly, amazing systems, man. I have a whole system built out. It's a machine now. It was me hustling. Now it's a business, meaning it's a machine now. Like it spits out deals on a consistent basis. And what I've done is I've took that money and I have a real estate investing software as well. You know what I mean? Where people pay me monthly. It's a subscription-based company. And now it went from me paying for all these softwares until, okay, let me invest my money into that. So my software, what it does is it skip traces. You can text blast from it. You can do RVMs, the whole nine. I have a like an a la carte investing platform for people. Because again, I tell my partner all the time, we don't know how long this is going to hold on. You know, so I need something that's recession proof. You know, people are always going to want to invest and get into the business. So that's why I have Skip Source, which is a real estate investing software. And I sell people distressed seller lists as well.
So are you making most of your money by your software or through the actual act of wholesaling?
The active business of wholesaling. Yes, that's where most of the money is coming from. That's an asset that I created from this business.
Uh-huh. What I like is Rashana's doing well because she has systems too. Man, that's what allows her to win.
Yes. So that's the biggest thing with systems, man.
When I hear system, it reminds me of the book. I think it's Cashflow Quadrant, where he talks about the dude who was hauling buckets and bringing the water versus the dude who built the pipeline. And the pipeline is your system. So how long did it take you to build out your system? And what does your system consist of?
Okay. Again, it was a lot of trial and error, man. I was hiring VAs. They were terrible. I didn't know they were terrible because, again, I didn't take a step back and, you know, self-evaluate and say, okay, do I know enough to do this? So starting off, I made sure I learned how to do everything in the business. So I know if someone is BSing me or not. You know what I mean? I know how the report should be on the phone with a seller. I know what to say to the cash buyer. I know how to market to the cash buyers and the sellers. But the system itself is so, we have a lady that does the skip tracing for us, right? I pull lists from softwares. I send the list to her. She gets us phone numbers and emails. I have 20 virtual assistants in the Philippines right now. They call all day. I have two guys that send out text messages all day in the Philippines. I'm paying them $3 an hour in the Philippines, $3 an hour. I have two people texting your phone all day, $1.50. And then I have one manager of the virtual assistants. We're paying her $5 an hour and she reports directly to me. That's part one, the marketing side. So once they get a lead, they send it to the CRM and my guys in the office, they will call you back and say, hey, Mr. Todd, I heard you had a property over here in Anaheim. I was wondering if you want to sell that property. You know, if the numbers make sense, they send you an offer on the phone and they go over the agreement with you on the phone to ensure that you sign. The agreements expire in 24 to 48 hours. Once it's signed, I send it to my transaction coordinator. She's more like a secretary, if you will. She calls the attorneys. She calls the seller to set up the appointments for us to go look at it. And then my partner, he goes to look at the property with the cash buyer that are buying the properties from us. And then it's kind of like rinse and repeat.
Hey, ladies, this is Rashana Scott. And are you looking for a community of women real estate investors? If so, I want to take a quick second to share with you Infinity Membership. Sorry, fellas, but Infinity Membership is a women's only online community for newbie and experienced investors. Come let your hair down and join a non-judgment zone sisterhood where all of your questions about investing in real estate get answered. This is also an opportunity to learn from the best of the best. Other seasoned and successful women in the industry share their success tips often. Our live group sessions are twice a month, and we support each other daily within our private Facebook group. Our sessions range from driving for dollars, to working with contractors, to out-of-state investing, raising private capital, marketing your deals, and so much more. Does this sound like something that you've been looking for? Well, we would love to have you. For more information, visit us at bit.ly/infinity membership. Again, that's bit.ly/infinity membership.
That is crazy. It's crazy because I'm in the process of, like, I have a VA. And I'm in the process of trying to hire more VAs. And so we're looking in the Philippines. And so one of my friends, she has a cleaning business. She's been hiring people from the Philippines. And so I was like, I need to try this Philippine stuff. Because American VAs, you know how much they want to charge you?
Right.
$25 an hour.
They're entitled.
$25 an hour. Nah, they don't even give you the full hour of work.
Nah,
they just send an invoice every Friday.
Right. Right, they're entitled.
And so it's crazy to hear that not only have you hired VAs, but you've hired a bunch of them.
Yes,
and
sir.
Then you hired VAs to manage the VAs.
Yes, yes. That she reports directly to me. Any issues, she listened to the calls. I listen to them too, but her primary thing is to listen to the calls, audit the calls, send me payroll. And she does most of the hiring with me and things like that. And she's like on them, you know, every day. Hey, we need leads. Because I give them metrics as well. They have metrics. My guys in the office have metrics. My dispo team over there, my guy over there, he has metrics as well. Numbers. It's a system. Again, Chick-fil-A, man. First stop, you talk to my virtual assistants on the phone. Second stop, you're talking to my guys in the office. Third stop, you're talking to the transaction coordinator. Fourth stop, we should be closing the transaction with the attorney. In it every time.
Yeah, if I could convey a belt. how long did it take you to build this system?
This system, to be honest, I had so much trial and error. And then I paid $5,000 to go to a 1-day mastermind and learn from a guy that's doing what I'm doing, but he's a multimillionaire doing it. So it goes back to what I'm saying, the value, man. A lot of people wouldn't do that. I paid $5,000. He showed me everything that I needed. And I came back to Atlanta and I went to work.
Yeah.
So I'd say 3 to 6 months.
I told people that nobody spends more money on coaching and courses than somebody who already has money. Like the broke person's like, nah, $5,000. You know what I could do with $5,000? I could go on a vacation.
Exactly.
Like, I could put $5,000. That's gonna allow me to be well off.
Uh-huh. I agree, because the objective of this is to build it so good that we can put an office manager in place. And now I can remove myself from coming here every day. Because again, we're making good money, but it's still active income. I'm still here, you know, overseeing the team, when I can hire a manager, an office manager, to do this, just like I did with the other VA. And a great thing about our system is Todd, I would probably highly recommend this to you if you're looking to scale some of your companies. Record everything. We use an app called Loom. I record everything. What to say, how to say it. If they say this, you say that. If they do this, you do that. Like, it's no wasted motions in there. You should already know how to execute. You know what I mean? And we live by the motto here. Results over excuses, man. Results over excuses. Did they sign the contract or not? Did you get it signed or not? Did you get it low enough or not? You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
Bars.
What do you do with leads that come in and they more so want retail? Like, do you have a realtor on your team that'll list the properties for you?
Absolutely. My partner is a realtor, and then one of my guys in the office is a realtor as well.
Okay, nice. And then in regards to numbers, right? So what are your metrics? Like, how many leads are you bringing in a day, a week, a month? Like, and then how is that converting to closings for you?
Okay. So most of the metrics we look at is, okay, so I'll start with the virtual assistants. They should be sending over, and again, they're not perfect. So they should be sending over 6 hot and warm leads a day. What is a hot lead? Somebody that's ready to close a deal in 14 days. Warm lead is probably a month. They need to talk to a husband or a daughter or another decision maker's involved. They need to send me 6 of those a day per rep. So we got about 20 of them. So it should be 6 times 20, whatever the math is on that. They should send those over.
120 deals.
120, so 120 leads, right? My guys in the office, they should be able to get 6 signed contracts per week. I need 6 signed contracts per week. I'll take three, but I really want six. Six signed contracts per week, right? Because again, we know it's a numbers game. You know what I'm saying? With you being a realtor and stuff like that, you know everything's not gonna close. Something is real estate, man. It's probably one of the most businesses ever. But you know, so we track that, right? And then I also track how many offers did they make daily. Before they leave, they have to put into our platform how many offers did you make every day. Okay, how many offers did you make? How many contracts were signed? How many follow-up calls did you do? As well as I would probably say, how many quality conversations did you have? A quality conversation to us is, did you find out why they want to sell it? Because again, at the end of the day, the money is cool, but who have you helped, man? What problem have you solved for this seller? You know what I mean? So why do they want to sell it? What price do they have in mind? What's their timeline to sell? And what is the condition of the property? I have to know that it's non-negotiable. That's a quality conversation to me. Uh-huh. I will also say you should be able to tell me three things about the person and three things about the property.
Right.
I like how you keep them accountable by making those matrix that you said. It's like there should be something quantifiable based on what you did, not just the hour, but what did you produce in that hour?
Exactly.
How did you figure out what those things should be? Because for me, my business is a little bit different, but I'm trying to get to the point where I think for me, I'm not seeing myself as a wholesaler as much as I'm just trying to find deals for myself.
Right.
But still, I have people who like they get paid for the hours, but I don't have anything to quantify that they put that time into that hour. So how do you figure those things out?
I would probably say I like to look at stuff that's measurable, number one. I like to look at stuff that you can improve on. And number three, I like to look at stuff that's really going to benefit the company long term. But most importantly, something that I can really look at and say, bro, this is an opportunity for you to get better, bro. This is where you drop the ball, but we're going to bounce back tomorrow, right? You know what I mean? So I like stuff like that. Really, I'll probably say, you know, let's get to the meat and potatoes, man. You know, let's take all the fluff out, man. The meat and potatoes. Did you get the contract signed or not? Did you get the quality? Because if you have a quality conversation, that lets me know you built the correct rapport. That means more than likely they should be signing the contract if they're serious, as they say they are. You know what I mean? Because if you're not, and also I track how many offers you made per day, right? Because it's like sports does, you know what I mean? You got to keep shooting your shot, man. So I tell them, like, bro, if you're not getting your shots up, you're not making the offers, then what are you doing? Because it should be 15 offers a day. 15 offers a day, six contracts a week.
That's intense.
When I say these numbers, I understand I'm in Atlanta, I'm in Tampa, I'm in Jacksonville, I'm in Orlando, and I'm in Charlotte and Raleigh. So I'm in three markets, really.
Yeah, that's all I was going to ask you. I didn't know what parts of the country that you were doing this in, because you mentioned Anaheim, and I was like, is he like nationwide?
I'll just give you an example.
Okay, got it. So you teach these people like how to find the value, what they should be offering based on what the value is. You're teaching them all that stuff.
Yes, sir. Because again, I have a course on how to do this. So step number one is look at acquisition. We have an acquisitions course. We have a dispositions course. So if I hire you in the acquisitions department, I've created this myself. So if you come in BSing me, bro, I'm going to know. You know what I mean? I'm going to know if you're BSing me, bro. Because again, I'm going to like, okay, did you look at module two? Module two says this. You know what I mean? Because again, it goes back to Loom. I recorded everything in the company. So it's no room for BS. You know what I mean? Like, or it's no room for BS because I've recorded everything. Thus, I can hold you accountable. So before you even get on the phone with my prospects, you're looking at the videos, and then it's almost like you're going to take a quiz with me as well. Okay, what's the ARV in this neighborhood? Let's break the numbers down. Okay, and I do a lot of role play with my guys too.
I like it a lot. So what's cool about this is like you took a skill and turned it into a business.
Yes, sir.
And that's what most people should be doing. My mom is a CPA and I keep telling her, stop doing the return. That's not your job. Right. I feel like your job really is just to own the system, because like for me, sometimes I feel like as an entrepreneur, you delegate all the tasks and then you focus on the scale and the marketing. But I feel like you've delegated the tasks and delegated the marketing. And so your job is really just to make sure that the people who you hired are doing what they're supposed to be doing.
And it goes back to Robert Kiyosaki's book. Which one is it? Cashflow Quadrant, where he talks about the dip. And once I read that book and understood that part, you know, I like Rich Dad Poor Dad just like everybody else. But that was the one for me right there, because he really dug in on that one and really started preaching. It was like the B, the I, and it made so much sense, you know, because again, if you think about it, when I first got started, I was self-employed. I was just hustling. You know what I mean? Going deal to deal, check to check. You know what I mean? And I had to take a step back and like, okay, leaders eat last. You're going to have to hire people and pay them and take what's left. You know what I mean? So that to anybody looking to get into any type of entrepreneurship, I highly recommend, taking a look at that one, because it makes so much sense, man, because you see so many people that, oh, I've been doing this business so long, but it's like you're still in the S quadrant. You know what I mean? And you can't, I can give this to a child if I have one. You know what I mean? But when you're self-employed, you can't.
That's such a bar.
And that's the thing, you know? And again, and to add on to it, like, so I use the money for this, because I feel like I'm in both, the B and I. I've used the money that I made with this to create SkipSource, which is a real estate investing software that allows people to, if they don't have the budget that I have, they can market on a smaller scale to get where I am. And I have VAs that run that as well.
How much are you spending on marketing?
On marketing for this business, we probably spend about close to 10 grand a month. That's marketing and overhead.
Okay. So when did you know, or when did you say, like, okay, it's time to scale? You said after deal two?
After deal two, I started to look at it like, okay, it's a lot, man. I mean, you know this with the real estate business, it's a lot, man. Like, you know, I started becoming deal to deal. And some people would say in the 9-to-5 world, check to check. I became deal to deal. Like, bro, I'm tired, man. I'm tired. You know, I'm tired. Like, I mean, when that third deal came around, I paid my car off cash. Why? That's one less bill to worry about. Now I can start putting even more money into marketing. You know what I mean? So at that point, I was tired. You know, I was like, man, I don't want to get burned out because I know what this business can do for me if I, you know, line my cards up and do this the right way. So at that point, I'm like, man, I got to hire a virtual assistant or something. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. A lot of people in the wholesale business, that's where they get stuck at. They're doing deals, but it's just them. Because I would go on vacation, and then when I come back, oh man, I gotta call Miss Scott back, or I gotta call this guy back. You know what I mean? But when I go on vacation now, I can check my software and it's coming in. Boom, boom, boom.
Uh-huh. Right. Right. And so you obviously saw the value in investing, like say, in that system and building out a team right away. So what are some challenges that you had to deal with along the way in terms of building? Because a lot of entrepreneurs, like you said, a lot of people get stuck at, you know, that building phase and they just don't do it, or some do it and it doesn't work out. And then it just like, you know, oh, this didn't work.
Yeah. I would probably say, man, letting go of the rope, like really like swat, like letting my ego go. Like, you know, because I was doing deals. I'm like, man, I'm the man. You know, I'm killing this. Okay. Blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm killing it. You know, and then I'm like, okay, man, this is a high paying job. I quit my job because I hated the job. You know what I mean? I hated the whole thing. So I think some of the challenges were utilizing my money properly. When I first started trying to scale, I was just throwing money at stuff because I heard somebody on YouTube talk about it. You know what I mean? Or... Uh-huh. Yeah, of course he's gonna tell me it's good because it's his product. So I would just use this product because this guy on Instagram said use it. And I would probably say I was not structured with the hiring when I first got started. You know, I lost some great people, and then some people who, in my opinion, they just weren't a good fit for what I wanted to build. They, you know, they wanted to go off and do their own thing. You know, I've had people try to steal the sauce or whatever and go do their own thing. So I made a point to make sure this thing is structured before I bring people on. Because I understand this, man, if it's not structured when you bring them on, you're wasting their time and you're wasting your time because they're not going to stay long. And then it goes back to it. Like my first job in high school was like Burger King. And I remember the first 2 weeks, they would sit you in the room and what they make you do? Watch videos and stuff like that before you get on the floor. So I said, man, I'm going to make sure this thing is structured before I bring anybody else on. And I'm going to make sure I'm in the right mindset to hire people and understand that I'm going to have to pay people. And that's, mm-hmm. That's what a lot of people drop the ball is ego, where they don't want to let go of the rope and give people responsibilities. But most importantly, a lot of people don't want to pay people, man. It's the truth.
That's real. Yeah, because you're questioning whether or not you can even afford it in the first place, right? Because that's the thing about business. Business is up and down. But to your point, Charles, when you do hire more people, yes, that gives you opportunity to make more money because now you've created, you know, two of you or three of you also, or whatever the case.
I feel like that's an employee mindset too, because even back to my point when I was talking about American PAs wanting $25 an hour, like that's me comparing it to like going out in the job market and finding a job. So you're like, if I were to go out and look for a job, I don't know what they'd pay me, but it probably wouldn't be whatever that is. So why should I pay this person? But I think you can actually look at it as, all right, I'm going to pay you $25 an hour to make me $200 an hour or $500 an hour, $1,000 an hour. because it's definitely possible. And so whatever anybody wants to be paid for an hour of their time is not enough, because your hour is priceless. And so, like, if you recondition your mind and you start and you stop looking at wages from an employee and start looking at it as a boss, it doesn't matter. The owner of the Clippers doesn't care that Kawhi Leonard gets paid $100 million for 4 years, because he's making $100 million a year, probably more. The owner of the Lakers doesn't care what they pay LeBron James, because he's making billions. There's a reason why these companies are valued the way they are. So that's actually, I'm learning a lot just by having this conversation. I was going to ask you what your best deal was, but, and this is so revolutionary, it seems like your best deal is putting a system together, not actually going out there doing the footwork and maneuvering it yourself. I don't think we've ever had this conversation on this podcast.
Yeah.
I really don't. Everybody that we talk to is like, I did that. I built this. I made it happen.
It's team, man. It's a team. I have a great team, man. Like, one of my guys, he's 21 years old, man. He made 10 grand last month. 10 grand. And he's already, and one thing I like about my guys, they listen to me and we have a great relationship. Not so much do what I say. No, it's like, it's almost like family, if you will, you know, and I know it's cliche, but it's like, man, I'm in the process of getting my Airbnb. And I told them, I said, hey, man, the money that you're making, you need to go get assets as well. Don't just come here and work for me, man. Like, don't come here and work with me. Like, bro, you need to be getting assets. I've connected one of my guys with a private money lender here in Atlanta so he can go get a rental property, because he stays with his mom right now. I'm like, bro, like, be respectful to your mom. If she wants you to cut it great, do whatever she says. Stack the money from this, go get you an Airbnb, go get you a rental property, and just keep working, bro. You know what I mean? Like, and I think that's where a lot of people drop the ball when they're trying to hire people is, okay, do what I say. But how are they growing and how are they benefiting outside of just making the money? You know what I mean? Because again, we've all been in that position at jobs where you're like, man, I'm just here. I'm counting the clock. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. I was going to ask you, are you paying people bonuses? Is there some sort of like incentives that you've tied to their compensation?
Yeah, so basically, I have a few different structures, right? With the virtual assistants, of course, you know, with them being in the Philippines, they prefer an hourly rate. You know what I mean? They get paid hourly. And then if they send a hot lead over and we close that deal, I send them $100 bonus once the transaction closes. And we send it to them on the next paycheck, right? And in America, we're like, oh, what's $100? But to them, man, they love that, man. They're like, they're overly excited. And so my guys in the office, I ask them, I give them the option. Do you want salary or do you want 100% commission? And I break the numbers down. For example, the biggest deal we did in our company was 45 grand. This was last month, 45 grand. We did 100K in 1 week. That deal was for 45 grand. One of my guys, he made $4,500 on that deal. You know what I mean? If you're on salary, I'm paying you, I want to say $2,500 a month. Plus 5% commission. So I let them know you can pick whatever way you want to go. You can go 100% commission or you can go salary plus commission. Because I'm one of the type of people, I understand that people have families to provide for and other things going on in their life that they may not quite be ready for 100% commission yet. And the good thing with me is they can choose to switch every quarter. So when the next quarter comes up, if they feel like, man, I left a lot of money on the table, I want to go 100% commission. So my guys in the office is 10% on every deal that closes. We pay them out immediately after the deal closes. Soon the deal closes, it hits the company account. You get paid the next day via QuickBooks. If you want to do salary, I want to say it's $2,500 a month plus 5% on whatever deal you close, right? And then my VA, you know, I pay them bi-weekly and they get $100 on every deal that they send over.
So you pay your deal finding people a different rate than you're paying your people who close the deals.
Yeah, so my virtual assistants, because you have to understand this, they're the ones getting the calls of, F you, don't ever call me again, who are you, I'm calling the police, or, you know, they're really like the front line, if you will. You know what I mean? They're really getting all the bad calls. And I promise them, once you send me a good deal, yes, I'm going to pay you bi-weekly, but I'm going to send you a bonus every time we close it. And I have a whole system where I track that as well. Man, so they can go in and look at it. It gives them something to look forward to.
If you haven't written a book or a course on this, you should, because I'm buying it.
It's funny you say that, man. That's the next plan. We're gonna do some I want to turn people into I want people to go from hustling to real businessmen, you know what I mean? And business women. So that's something I'm working on with my partner. We're gonna do like a, you know, 2-day type of thing where you come in And really, we're gonna break your business down and really teach you how to really like level this thing up, because it's too much money to be made out here, bro. You know what I mean? And that helped me, you know. So yeah, we're definitely gonna do something like that where we really break businesses down and really show you how to really build a company, man. A real legitimate system.
It's risky because like we said earlier in the show, like a lot of us didn't come from this. Right. And so the idea of even hiring a virtual assistant is a leap in itself. The idea of hiring people to do these things is a leap in itself. But like you said, whenever you take that risk, you tend to kind of find a way to work it out. But one of the things you said that I like is that a lot of it was trial and error. And I know a lot of people, they want to make sure that their system is flawless before they launch the system, as opposed to launching the system and then kind of critiquing it and finding a way to make it perfect. So I definitely learned a ton, and we didn't really even talk about real estate. We talked about just strictly business and systems, right, right. Something I'm trying to build out. That's my life. My life right now is systems. How do I develop a process? How do I make sure that I have things going automatic? How do I make sure I have this thing running without my presence, without me having to think of everything that needs to be done? So super powerful episode. And I know that's where Rashawn is as well.
So before we wrap, I have a question. How did the pandemic help or hurt your business or make you pivot in any way?
Okay, man, that's a great question. That's the first time I got that one. I would probably say when it first popped off, I was nervous. I'm very transparent. I was nervous. I'm like, man, you know, because I closed the deal 2 weeks before, you know, the news started reporting it. And I hit it. And I closed that deal. I made like 13 grand. So, you know, my thought was, okay, it's really about to be a great year. You know what I mean? I'm up. So what we had to do is take a step back and say, okay, because at the time I was in South Carolina as well, but it really wasn't really a great market. So I had to take a step back and say, okay, it's time to be more structured, and it's time to really, really be more efficient with the investing. Meaning we're only putting money into things that work. Cold calling and text blast. That's all we do right now. Before that, I was doing RVM. I was reaching out to everybody in my phone. I was trying to pay people to go drive and find properties for me. I said cold calling and text blasting. Why? Because everybody has a phone in their hand or they have a phone somewhere, right? So I pivot like that. But it did slow down for me for about a month. I'm being honest. It did slow down for a month. And then I had to just recalculate some things and really take a step back and say, okay, where's the opportunity? The opportunity is the landlords who are dealing with tenants that won't move. So we have a thing in our company where it's called cash for keys. Basically, what I would do is I tell them, I'll take care of the tenant. Don't worry about that. Sign my paperwork. I'll get it done. So I go to the tenant and say, hey, Mr. Johnson or whatever. Listen, I can pay for you a U-Haul. I can give you $2,000 to move. I can get your Airbnb. We actually have this same scenario going on right now. I can get your Airbnb. I can pay for your U-Haul. I can give you $2,000 to move into your next place. You know, what do you need done? What do you need done? I'm talking to the tenant, right? And it all goes back to relationships, man. I build a great relationship with the seller, the tenant, and the buyer, you know, because I want to make a win-win-win for everybody. So that is one of the best. That's where the opportunity really came at. These people who were dealing with tenants that didn't want to move and things like that. I'll probably say that. So cash for keys, you know, we pay the tenants to go, and then we ask for a price cut from the seller as well.
I think what's dope is capitalizing on an opportunity that the pandemic presented and presented in mass. I always tell people, they look at like the money that was made during the pandemic and they're like, oh man, so much money was made. Well, they gave people a bunch of money and they shut down all the places for them to spend it. They got to give it to us. Who else are they going to give it to?
Thanks.
But people with online businesses. So we are blessed. Thank you for coming on the show, man. We're going to ask you the last few questions and then we're going to take us out. So the first question is, what is your favorite business or real estate book?
Man, I have a few, man. I would probably say, and this one I would recommend to you as well, Traction. That's the one that really got me right with the systems, bro. Traction, Why Should White Guys Have All the Fun? And Jewish Phenomena. You know, I think that one really taught me a lot about money and really understanding money, you know, because again, I didn't come from a community or a family where money was a taboo subject in my household. You know what I mean? It was more of, we don't have it, or hey, I can't afford that, or why are you asking for that? You know what I mean? And I think the Jewish Phenomenon really taught me that it's a whole other thing. You know what I'm saying? And then what was the next question?
Who is business. Someone you look up to and why?
Hold on really quick.
Wait, he listed like three business books.
I was going to say something about something. Dang. All right.
He said business something.
Never mind. Go ahead.
All right. The next question is, who is someone you look up to and why?
I would probably say, man, you know, my mom, somebody I know personally, probably be my mom. Just the resilience and, you know, the perseverance of her to really raise me and my siblings throughout everything. And, you know, she's always in great spirits. But most importantly, man, she's always told me to go for it. It was never a thing with her where, are you sure you want to do that? It was always, you know, you've done this, this and this, you know, go for it. You know, just be smart. Stay around the right people. And, you know, just keep being the great kid that you are that I raised. You know, so I would definitely say my mom. That's really who I do it for. You know, because she needs to see it. You know what I mean? She needs to see it as well, man. And I would probably say someone that I've never met personally. I mean, definitely, I would probably say Bob Johnson. Any of my frat brothers that are killing it in business right now. I would probably say that.
This isn't a question on our last four, but I'm curious. You're in Atlanta. Atlanta is big baller, flashy, awesome city. You've been killing it, man. What have you bought to celebrate your success, if anything?
I haven't bought anything yet because I come from humble beginnings. Like, I'm not from Atlanta, so I'm not caught up in it like a lot of people are. You know, I mean, I look at it as I view Atlanta as a business for me. I'm here on business. I don't feel like this is my last stop. So I'm really here on business to build businesses, and I'm here to build relationships and leverage those and things like that. So I haven't really bought anything crazy. I've made some great investments. I would probably say I love to travel. So I've traveled a lot, but I'm looking to get the Porsche 911 probably next year, though. Mm.
Looking to get a Porsche 911 too, man.
That's the, man, listen, that's the one. So if I were to do anything, it'll be that next year for my birthday, next March. And that's only after I make sure I have 20K a month passing. So I got goals. I have goals I want to reach before I really get into that type of stuff. And, I don't have a car note right now. So it's kind of spoiled me not to have a car note. You know what I mean?
What sets apart successful business owners and investors from those who give up, fail, or never get started?
I would definitely say the mindset, man. It takes a different type of person to really get into this and stay in this through the ups and the downs. Because a lot of people, I feel as if they don't want to sacrifice and they don't want to go through that ugly stage. When I say that ugly stage, meaning I calling 1,000 people getting hung up on, threatening to be sued. You know what I mean? People stealing deals from you. People quitting on you, things like that. A lot of people, they don't want to see it through. You know, they want it done overnight. And one thing I've learned, man, nothing worth having pops overnight. Nothing worth having comes overnight. You know what I mean? So I probably say that's the biggest thing. Mindset, a lot of people don't have patience and they're not willing to sacrifice. You know, they're not really to market their product, although their friends may scroll past it because they're thinking their friends are going to, you know, talk about them because, oh, their product sucks or something. You know what I mean? That type of stuff, man. A lot of us, we're in our own way. You know, we're our own problem and solution, if you ask me.
It's funny because, like, we let our friends and our family stop us. And I don't know about y'all, but none of my friends or family have paid my bills. Right. Like, none of them. None of them showed up to my house and said, hey, I got this.
Right.
So, like, why do I care if they dislike what I'm doing to make sure I can't pay those bills?
Another way I look at it is like, okay, these people who you're afraid to fail in front of, like, what do they have? Like, what do they have? What have they accomplished? What have they built? You know, most people have gave up on themselves a long time ago, man. You know, I kind of feel like a lot of people kind of like quit on life around 30. You know, they kind of like, oh, man, oh, well, I may not ever find love, or I may not get back in shape like I was 5-6 years ago, and it's over. You know what I mean? They just start going through the motions. So, I mean, who are you trying to impress? I feel like this, man, once you know your why, and I feel like that's another reason why a lot of people don't make it in business and entrepreneurship. What's your why? Why are you doing this? You know, your why will take you through all the trials and tribulations and the valleys and the peaks that are going to come with it. You know, when you know why you're doing this, whether it's kids, wife, family, the whole, your community and things like that. You know what I mean? So, you know, I'm the oldest in my family. I have all my siblings. They watch everything I post on social media. They watch exactly how I move. I've heard them repeat things to me that I've said on social media that I forgot I said, you know what I mean? So, and you know, that's the biggest thing. I know my why, you know, my family, my community, you know, but most importantly, like, I want to leave a legacy to my future kids and family members. You know, I have this thing called Robinson privilege, right? I want my kids to have Robinson privilege. What is that? Two-parent household assets, a wealth of knowledge, you know what I mean? Coming from structure and things like that. You know, those type of things, man. So Robinson privilege, so they can come into the world not having to worry about some of the things I had to worry about, you know? And I feel
that's
like,
my new thing.
I knew you was going to say that. Charles over there looking like, Ogles. I know. I'm like, Charles is about to tweet it. As soon as we get off, it's going to be on Twitter. Watch.
This is a great episode, man.
Yes, yes.
Any last words, Rashana?
Yeah, we have a last question. Marquise, what does success mean to you?
Success means to me, man, how many people have you impacted in a positive way? You know, I can't tell you how excited I was that one of my sales reps made 10 grand at 21. You know what I mean? I can't tell you the feeling that I have that I'm about to release two scholarships named after my two deceased grandmothers. You know what I mean? Because they helped me so much growing up as well. So that type of stuff. Success is how many people you've impacted. And, you know, I think that's probably it. How many people have you impacted and how many people have you impacted in a positive way? And just, you know, how many people have you put on, man? You know, how many people have you helped get to whatever level they want to get to in their life? And how many people have you helped just go for it, man? You know what I mean? Like I love when people say, man, bro, you motivate me, dog. I need to hear that, you know, because it takes a lot to do this every day and be consistent like this with results. You know what I'm saying? Says means to me, man. You know, how many people you've impacted in a positive way? You know, how many people have you put on? What type of lineage have you left for your family long-term and things like that? You know, I changed my name to The World Forever on so many social medias because I want this to be something that's forever. You know, and I really believe that. In my heart, I believe that. World's Forever. It should be forever. When I go, the next family member should take it and keep running with it. You know, just like they do at Walmart. You Google the top 10 richest people in America, a few of them from the Walmart family is going to pop up. Why can't we be the same way?
Yeah, absolutely. Good stuff. Such a great interview. Thank you so much for the gems, the knowledge. I mean, we haven't done a live interview in a while, and I don't think we've done an interview this long in a while.
I appreciate it, man.
But it, man, yeah, so many good pointers from, you know, like I said, just starting out and having that exposure, right? Knowing that you are different and then feeding that side of you, you know, right. Knowing what you wanted to go after. And then, man, jumping right out there, taking a risk, cashing out. Like, right. You know, so many people don't take that risk because they're afraid. And then, like I said, but they're playing it safe. Right. But there's no way you definitely wouldn't have had these, you know, the opportunities that you have and would have built the business had you that you have now, you know, you were still being a teacher. So good stuff. Where can people find you, follow you, support what you have going on?
You can find me I'm heavy on Instagram. I've just started getting on Twitter like that, but it's wealth underscore forever on both of those platforms, on Instagram and Twitter. So yeah, you can find me on those two. I mean, you know, reach out to me, man. If y'all are in Atlanta, man, please reach out to me. I love the show y'all some Southern hospitality and all that good stuff. I mean, I feel like we have everything here. You know, we love to have y'all. And man, thank you for the opportunity. And Miss Rashana, I'm gonna definitely tell my mom I met you on the show today.
Yes.
Making connections out here. Absolutely. Also, we can't end the show without giving a shout out to the brother Andre Hatchett. I think he sent me a DM and he was like, hey man, you gotta get this brother on the show. I was like, I know that dude, man.
Right.
We've been trying to make this happen.
That's my guy. That's my guy. I went and saw him Saturday, you know, for his birthday. I pulled up on him.
I didn't know it was his birthday. Usually I send him something for his birthday. I gotta get him something. You gotta definitely show respect and honor to the people who are just dope people. And he's just a good person, all around good person. So
all around, man.
So with that, this is another episode of the Oglesby and Scott Show, which is my favorite podcast. I learned a lot because I get to interview the guests and ask questions that help me. And then also get to help you guys too, and hopefully help Rashana Scott. My name is Charles Oglesby. Make sure you click all the links in the show notes from all of our dope friends, Terry Ajoma, Hood Estates, Charm City Buyers, people who are just doing amazing things. And make sure you leave us a rating and review. We like 5-star reviews. We like ratings and comments. Share the podcast with your friends and family because we're getting a good amount of listens, but the world is big. And so we got to continue to grow this. So with that, any last words, Rashana, or should we take it out?
Oglesby and Scott Show, signing off.
There we go.
Hold up. What's going on, podcast listeners? This is your man, Donald the Voice, the official editor and podcast producer of the Oglesby and Scott Show. And listen, I just had to come in and tell you that we appreciate your listenership, and I want to give you a special offer for listening to this podcast. If you have voiceover, podcast, or video editing needs, let's talk. You can go over to donaldthevoice.com/contact, and I'll be happy to talk with you about what you need and how I can serve you. You want to sound good and look good so that people can feel good and do good as a result of listening or watching your content, and I'm here to help you make that happen. So let's talk. Go over to donaldthevoice.com/contact, and we'll talk. Have a good rest of the day. day, evening, morning, whatever time it is. And I'll talk to you soon.